Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Holly Wise, Secretary Director for the Global Development Alliance of the U.S. Agency for International Development. And joining us in our conversation is Elise Stork.
Holly, you've described a fascinating and very accomplished career. Tell us about the changes that you've observed in foreign assistance over the past few decades.
I've been around for a while, and I think it's fair to say that a lot has changed over the span of my career. Much of what we have been doing in foreign assistance is based on a kind of post-World War II reality, if you will, and taking that forward to the future some. If you look at the numbers, for example, in 1970, the kind of work that we were doing overseas was largely official development assistance that was done either directly or through a handful of non-governmental organizations. In fact, if you look at resource flows in 1970 from the U.S. to developing countries, there was about 70% of those resources that flowed were official development assistance. It was government money, public money. And there really weren't a lot of other players out there. You didn't see corporations that were either sourcing raw materials all over the world or manufacturing and distributing product all over the world. You didn't have this whole phenomenon of globalization as active. You didn't have universities and a whole host of non-governmental organizations, PVOs, private volunteer organizations, as we sometimes refer to them, that with the kind of reach and placement and the tremendous skills and assets that they bring to addressing development issues. So there weren't a lot of players, and there wasn't a lot of private money that was going overseas. Flash forward to 2000, and that reality is completely the opposite. In fact, about 80% of the resources at that point that flow from the U.S. overseas to developing countries are private flows, and only 20% are official development assistance monies. Now, that's particularly striking when you think that the U.S. is the lead donor in the world in terms of total dollars spent on foreign assistance. And yet we're the minority shareholder, if you will, if you look at the total resource pie of U.S. resources that go overseas. So it's a very different world than one which we started in.
How would you characterize some of the business or social and political drivers that have led to this sort of reversal in the share of resources?
The fact that there are companies that need to and want to source goods and services from overseas, the fact that there are the markets are growing most overseas as compared to the growth in U.S. markets, that's a huge driver. The fact that in this smaller world and more visible world, company behaviors are under a lot of scrutiny. That there's the recognition, for example, that it's not just important to be a good company so everybody will like you, but also so that you can maintain your social license to operate. And it's about the competitiveness of company operations overseas that has corporations in particular really paying attention to how can they be part of the solution? What can they do not only in terms of corporate social responsibility, but how can they provide some leadership in addressing global development issues?
Well, surely they need educated, healthy people, just as we do here in the United States, in order to be profitable.
You betcha. If they are not helpful in addressing HIV/AIDS issues, for example, they'll have nobody to make their cars and nobody to buy their cars. And that's something which is a stark reality that they deal with on a daily basis.
Holly, tell us a bit about the way that USAID identifies different alliance opportunities, and then how do you develop these opportunities into real public-private partnerships?
Well, frankly, some of it is opportunistic. Because we're moving from a frame or a mindset which is largely about how do we look for partners to implement our programs, and we do that sometimes through formal solicitation, to how do we look for resource partners that can be co-equals in these development undertakings. It means that we have to think more creatively. It means that we have to expand our Rolodex. It means that we have to be comfortable being out and about and talking to a much more diverse set of potential players. So how do we go about doing that? Some of it is we reach out through multipliers like trade associations and present a kind of general message, which is we're open for business if you are needing or wanting to think about engaging in this kind of work. we have put out a couple of general solicitations saying, in a formal sense, we are seeking your good ideas and would be willing to support activities if there is significant private leveraged resources to conduct them. We have also approached individual companies where we either know that they have a strong reputation for wanting to be a corporate leader and have a strong commitment to responsible behavior that would tend to suggest that they would be interested in working on issues that we're interested in working on, or where they have a particular need or a particular problem. And that's where you think about the extractive sector industries, oil and gas companies, timber companies. Those who do water kind of work are natural partners because they have a particular need and they have resources to put toward these sorts of activities.
Besides supporting the alliances monetarily, what other support does USAID provide?
Probably the best thing that we have is our technical staff and the fact that we have these field missions around the world. When we are sitting down and talking with, for example, a mining company, they don't necessarily want or need to co-finance something with us, but they would be interested in the fact that we know something about tuberculosis and know something about working in Uzbekistan and know something about the ways in which you link one activity with a whole set of other activities in order to have a sustainable program or a sustainable development activity. And so what I say to my folks is, if you're leading with your checkbook, you're in the wrong place, because our money is not our best thing. That what our assets are, that we are have a lot of technical depth across a whole range of sectors, that we have good systems for accounting for funds and for doing due diligence on potential partners on the implementation side. The fact that we have, or forward deployed, as my boss Colin Powell would say, we have these field missions around the world. And we know the local customs, we know the local officials, we understand the NGOs that are working there and the track records that they have. We have a whole network of contacts that are different than that which a company or a university might have. We also, our government, which I would suggest is both an asset and a liability, an asset in the sense that we have a certain convening power, we have a certain credibility in communities, but with that also comes some of the slowness of government and some of the concern of government, some of the risk aversion of government, and I'm not going to change those, but we try to work on that a little bit to make us a better partner.
I understand USAID has a development alliance in Angola with Chevron Texaco. Could you describe this alliance, Holly, and some of the results that it has achieved?
It's a really exciting activity, and it is particularly interesting because it's not one that we did the leading on. It was one where we met Chevron Texaco partway through a process that they were going through. What they had decided was, having done some nice corporate social responsibility activities in Angola and a variety of other places, it was time for them to think about having a more substantial involvement in the development of and the transformation of Angola beyond the area which was just kind of outside their gates. And they had been asked by the head of state there to think about standing up for a large project. So they did their homework, and they thought about whether they wanted to be involved in a large project, read infrastructure, and decided that may not be their best contribution. And what they actually came to was thinking that for both reasons of sustaining their investment and the growth of Angola as a nation, investing in people was the best way to go. They came to AI. What they also realized is that they are a good energy company and don't claim to have huge experience in development work, and that they wanted to make a commitment, but in partnership with others. So they went on partner search and came to us. And after much kind of to and fro and getting to know each other and dancing around potential opportunities, we, in fairly short order, signed a memorandum of understanding which committed us and them each to put in about $10 million toward a rather loosely described economic development alliance for Angola. And what, in fact, was the first activity that we agreed on for this alliance is an agricultural revitalization program, which involves five U.S. NGOs that we have worked with for a long period of time and had an existing relationship with in Angola. The way that it actually played out is Chevron Texaco decided to write a check to AID so that we would act, in a sense, as the fiscal agent for them, and also so that we would provide the management oversight to these activities. We figured out that, yes, we have gift authority, and we could take the check in, and, oh, by the way, that this would create a tax deduction if Chevron Texaco chose to take it, just as though they were giving it to a 501c3, a not-for-profit. They gave the money to AID. We then had it reapportioned and put it down to our field mission, where they then executed it through an NGO consortia arrangement to do agriculture work. Now, that's exciting and wonderful because it means that there were resources to take it beyond what we had money for in the first instance, which was basically emergency feeding, and instead grow it to support seed multiplication, bringing tools to the farmers, helping these demobilized soldiers go back to land that had been having the landmines taken off it. They could get back to work and plant their crops, and the emergency food would tide them over. But they basically were making an investment in their future and able to get back into productive agriculture. That's the very first activity. And again, that's wonderful in its own right. But I think even more substantial have been other benefits of this alliance. What it's helped us do is to understand Chevron Texaco, among others that we formed alliances with, as a company. The fact that they have the same sorts of issues and concerns about thinking globally and acting locally that we do. They're going through the same sort of change process about how to move from one-off activities to more sustainable programs. They have the same sort of cultural concerns or aversion that we do about partnering with people that you don't know very well or that aren't don't have the secret handshake. And we've learned from each other through that. So that's been hugely rich, I think, for us as an agency in these various partnerships to be able to take on board the experience of the private sector, of the for-profit sector, and supplement that which we know in the public sector. In addition, through the experience of working on these alliances, various corporate partners have come to understand development issues in a very different way and found their voice. And they have a very different platform for sharing their perspectives and this experience than do we in government. And so what I've been so pleased to see is that chairman and other corporate leaders increasingly standing up for development issues, putting it in their own words and in their own frame, but really tackling some of the kinds of things that are my life's work in with a special kind of commitment and a special kind of gravity.
That was a very interesting description. How does one measure results when we are assisting other countries? We'll ask Holly Wise of the U.S. Agency for International Development when the Business of Government Hour returns.